The Matrix turns 20? We're going to talk about it on this episode of Pop Life.
On-demand audio on WAER is supported by SRC Incorporated, headquartered in Syracuse, New York. SRC is actively hiring engineers and other positions. Learn more at srcinc.com/careers.
A computer hacker named Neo learns from mysterious rebels about the true nature of his reality and the prophecy that tells of his role in the war against the machines. That's the tale that the Wachowskis set out to tell 20 years ago. The Matrix, starring Keanu Reeves, Lawrence Fishburne, and Carrie-Anne Moss, is a dark future science fiction movie where machines rule the world and humans are not only their slaves, but a key power source.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
The Matrix.
Do you want to know what it is? The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. Even now, in this very room. You can see it when you look out your window or when you turn on your television. You can feel it when you go to work. When you go to church, when you pay your taxes. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
To help me celebrate The Matrix and its 20th anniversary is Charisse LaPree, Assistant Professor of Communications at the Newhouse School at Syracuse University and host of the podcast The Critical and the Curious, where in season two, they're talking Keanu Reeves.
Welcome. All Keanu.
All
the time.
Keanu all the time. Now, you haven't gotten to the Matrix stuff yet, but you are becoming, through this concentration of your podcast, a Keanu expert, right?
Sure.
And you host this with our mutual friend, Bob Thompson.
Absolutely. A Keanu expert. Okay, so as somebody who is an expert in something, I hesitate to call this exploration into Keanu an exploration into becoming an expert, primarily because we are talking about Keanu's roles on film. And we are looking at, it's called a star study, where you closely unpack the narrative of a individual, of an actor, of a celebrity, through their public work, their public story, and what you know about their private story. We are not immersing ourselves deeply in his private story. And I feel like that is essential to becoming an expert. You need to know what roles he took, what roles he didn't take, you know, where he lived at this point. Like, I'm not a Keanu fanatic, but I'm a fan, and I feel like I am developing a greater appreciation for the work, the story, the being that is Keanu Reeves on screen.
Now, he gets an unfair rap of being not the greatest actor.
Yeah.
Right? The Matrix happens to be one of my favorite movies.
Hands down.
And not just because of all the action, but because of a lot of the innovations that this film offered at the time.
Yeah.
That we'll talk a little bit about.
And narrative innovations, production innovations, graphic innovations. Like, it's an amazing film. It's an amazing franchise. And just to get ahead of myself, I am amazed at how many of my students have not seen it.
Oh, wow.
It. Yeah.
See, first of all, science fiction is my favorite genre in movies. But it was also just a cool AF movie.
Yeah.
It was because not only is it science fiction, but it's a kung fu movie.
It's a philosophical mashup.
Yeah. And it is a sort of punk grunge subgenre.
Cyberpunk.
Yeah, cyberpunk. So the Wachowskis have taken all of those sort of genres and mashed them together to make this trilogy.
Yes.
And it is a fantastic movie. So if you haven't seen the movie, again, Keanu Reeves stars in it. He is living in
every city.
Every city. It's a world where it's a virtual world. that he is living in.
Well, that we come to reveal that.
We come to reveal that.
He is a cog in a machine in every city. He is every man. And lo and behold, he goes down the rabbit hole. The world opens up to him and his eyes become open.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. Remember, all I'm offering is the truth, nothing more.
And machines in the future are running this dark world, but they're harvesting humans as human batteries. They are using humans to generate power. And they are keeping them in a sleep and dreamy state in which they are in this sort of virtual world. And Keanu is the prophecy, the person that's going to come along.
He's the Messiah.
He is the Messiah.
Savior.
Let's go ahead and put it out there.
Yeah. He
is the one. That is the language that they use that will begin to free man from this enslavement, the slave state at the hands of machines. Now, we tend to tell these stories with these we tend to not have the brightest idea of our future, I think. Maybe it's just because it makes for a good story, or we're just not optimistic beings. But we tend to tell these dark dystopian future stories. And I don't know if it's just that genre is popular now, but even if you go all the way back to 1984, a lot of the science fiction tells of a very dark period in our future, and this is no different.
Yeah, we're deep in and have been for some time about our post-apocalyptic dystopia, right? So we can go back to 1984. My personal favorite is A Brave New World. When we talk about 1984, Brave New World, Fahrenheit 451. Handmaid's Tale is winning awards left and right. I also have a piece online about the post-apocalyptic dystopia and white tween angst, right? So the way in which we situate this often white teenage character who's desperately looking for direction, and that person, lo and behold, is going to save the rest of us.
That's Hunger Games?
Hunger Games, Maze Runner, a little Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. What was the other one? Divergent. Mm-hmm. Not a fan of that one, but yes. So we see this narrative coming back again and again, especially over the past 10 to 15 years. Before The Matrix, we have, you know, The Running Man, right? There's a few dystopians. We have Blade Runner. Those are all out of the 80s.
God. You touch my heart.
Anytime.
That's another one of my favorites.
Yeah. So, you know, we have these dystopian films that are blockbusters in the 80s. When we come to the 90s, there's less of them. Until The Matrix hits that pivot point in 1999. We do talk about Thriller Keanu before we talk about Matrix Keanu, and we talk about Johnny Mnemonic, right? The sort of prequel to The Matrix, if you will, that again is that tech dystopia starring Ice-T and Dolph Lundgren. You know, and we talk
Academy
about
Award mashup. Winners there.
Exactly, as we talk about this mashup between the 80s and 90s. And, you know, I think it's because dystopias allow us to be more critical than utopias. Mm-hmm. Utopias are what we dream about. Dystopias are what we need to talk about.
Right.
And so the films that become popular are dystopic visions because we want to give voice to something that's happening now that makes us feel uncomfortable. So we amplify that, give it 20 years in the future, and this is the world where we are heading to.
Yeah. The Wachowskis, now this is a pure action film, but it's a complicated story to tell. And I had to watch it twice to get it. And I don't know if that speaks how slow I am, but I had to in order to get this sort of the back and forth between, even though it was revealed later in the movie, I had to go back having had it revealed to me to watch it again from the beginning to appreciate all that was going on. But it is a bit of a complicated tale. But it's a movie all about choices.
Yes, you know, free will.
It is about free will and choices and taking blue pills and red pills and making a choice to face reality rather than staying in your comfortable bubble, which a lot of people do. There were a lot of innovations in this film. They introduced what's now become known as bullet time,
yes,
where you can physically see the bullet flying through the air. The sort of, I don't know what they call it, the technical term, but the sort of stop animation floating of a character.
Sure. So a couple things. When we talk about bullet time, right, we're seeing the world from the perspective of the bullet. And there is a photographer out of MIT, and he has a lab where they're shooting in super high speed in order to see the bullet cut through an apple. And I'm blanking on it, and I feel like all of my classmates are going to laugh at me. But to turn that into something popular, right? So that was a scientific, super high-speed shutter was a scientific way to see what was happening at a nuanced frame-by-frame level that we could not appreciate with, say, 30 frames per second, right? We need 200 frames per second. So the adoption of bullet time in the film is really an innovation of science into pop culture, right? There was already these images that were out there, but they weren't used in a fun, filmic, entertaining fashion. As for the sort of freeze frame spin, you know, that was done through a circular set of cameras so that at any given time, in any given frame, you know what something looks like from every single angle. And I think, you know, virtual reality was already in existence technically. But as we become, or excuse me, as virtual reality becomes more popular, kind of everyday usage, Oculus Rift, you can buy it, you can play with it at home. There's commercials for it on television with Leslie Jones, you know. We are seeing how insightful and forward-thinking that approach was in 1999. You want to be able to see something from every single angle, and they've given you that opportunity through this strategic camera placement that hadn't been done before.
Yeah, they had to do that to make the plot and the story work.
Yeah.
So if you have Trinity going up in the air ready to kick someone and freezes and the camera moves around her to catch all those different angles and then kicks, I mean, they had to invent technology to make that part of the story happen.
Absolutely. And, you know, the freeze frame at this point is, at the point of 1999, is fairly cliche because, you know, you jump up, it freezes.
Right.
Like, it's like the end of a 80s sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
But it's standard in video games. And the embrace of it in video games, I think, is what triggers the need to bring that into reality, right? The freeze frame, the spin, and then the kick, that's standard Mortal Kombat staging and directing. So I think that's such an important innovation when it comes to The Matrix, is the way in which it was bringing together seemingly disparate technologies in a way that anybody could sit in a theater and watch.
The other unique thing about this movie is the different philosophies and religious philosophical,
yes,
ideas that are introduced in this movie. Everything from existentialism to Marxism, feminism, Buddhism, nihilism. I mean, it's all in there.
It's a philosophical mashup.
And it is it's just written into the dialogue. And so you have this high energy action movie, which generally brings, you know, some benign dialogue. But this movie pairs all that action, all the excitement of all that action and all the special effects with this great dialogue that really gets you thinking.
I agree. And I'll make a point you said earlier about having to watch this twice. As Bob and I have been systematically going through Keanu Reeves films since Bill and Ted, I would argue this is a mark of the films that he chooses to make. A rewatching of Bill and Ted, I promise you, will be...
I don't know if I've ever watched it.
Then a watching and a rewatching of Bill and Ted, I promise you, will give you a different insight into their historical mashup, right? Because Bill and Ted is these two slack-jawed students who are terrible students going back through time to collect historical figures. You know, talking about the thoughtful action hero when we did Speed and Point Break together, we see that there is, you know, this kind of banal cliche blow things up, but at the same time, Keanu Reeves brings a consideration of philosophy, of a life philosophy, to each and every one of his roles. And I remember going to see this for the very first time in Boston in 1999. I remember being scared walking home, convinced there was going to be an agent around every corner. But since then, I have watched it countless times. I will watch it every time it comes on television. And every time I watch it, I get something new. Every time. And that, I think, is the mark of a wonderful film, is that there's always something you didn't see. Whether or not it was purposeful or not, the fact that every viewing takes you down a different rabbit hole, I think, is why this film is considered one of the greatest sci-fi films of all time.
Yeah. The other thing I really love about it is the characters just have the coolest names. You have Neo. You have Morpheus. You have
Trinity.
And all these other characters in Switch, but then you get to the villain, which is the machines, but they are their representative is Agent Smith.
Yes.
So you have all these cool names, and then the villain is just Smith, and it is a character played by Hugo Weaving that is just really effective. Again, great dialogue, a lot of philosophy. Coming out of his mouth.
Every mammal on this planet instinctively develops a natural equilibrium with the surrounding environment, but you humans do not. You move to an area and you multiply and multiply until every natural resource is consumed. And the only way you can survive is to spread to another area. There is another organism on this planet that follows the same pattern. Do you know what it is? A virus. Human beings are a disease, a cancer of this planet. You are a plague, and we are the cure.
So, like I said, every time I watch it, every time I talk about it, I think of something new. And sitting here talking about it now, the way in which Smith, as an agent, as this, he has a name and he has a face, but he's nameless and faceless, right? He's a program, colonizes this world, just brings me back to John Smith, right? That he is coming to this, whatever your world is, and infiltrating it. And that is his evilness, mm-hmm. right? That you exist at his pleasure, and that's scary. That's it. I don't even have a second half to that. You exist at his pleasure, and if he doesn't want you to exist, you won't exist.
Yeah.
And it's not the architect, right? The architect is the one who has created Smith, but it is the manifestation. So we can talk about all the backstory about how this thing got here.
And there is an architect.
Yes. How all this stuff got here, but the fear is always the tip of the spear.
Yeah. Eventually, Neo does lead a rebellion against the machines. It's not a typical battle in which the good guys win. There's actually a bit of a compromise between human and machine on how to go forward, and which I found to be a pretty interesting ending. I mean, a lot of the thing. I think audiences tend to like to cheer something on,
sure.
to say we won, we were victorious, human beings rule, we rock. But this was not that case. This is a formidable opponent in the machine world, and they have the upper hand. And so really it is through Neo's actions that they negotiate a truce to figure out how to move forward.
So we're spoiling the story, right?
Yes, we are, but
probably
it's 20 years old.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree. Then I will draw attention to the self-sacrifice of Neo. The Christ-like positioning in which the entire film ends, where he gives himself to the machine so that humanity may survive. And to come back to the philosophical mashup, the religious mashup, the scuttling of our desire for a happy ending, our main character sacrifices himself. Our main character allows the rest of us to survive, which is the ending of, you know, the biggest book of all time,
mm-hmm.
right? It's biblical references are slapping you in the face.
Yeah.
And I think that's also what makes this an interesting film. It asks you to reconsider what you know about, what you believe about the Bible, the story of Jesus Christ, the historical nature of popularity and figures and value. And I think that even though it doesn't feel like a movie ending, it is clearly an important ending that is integrated into our existence, you know, whether or not you believe, whether or not you are a biblical enthusiast, this story is ingrained into every piece of American culture, and they go ahead and throw it back in your face to make you realize this is what is at the root of our conversations.
The Matrix, 20 years old this March, March 31st, I believe. And it is the first of a trilogy. There's The Matrix Reloaded and The Matrix Revolutions. I want to thank you, Charisse LaPree. Talking about cool names. I mean, it sounds like you should be coming to us from New Orleans, Louisiana, or someplace.
I appreciate that. actually, it's funny. My mother said, I asked her, I'm like, where'd you get LaPree? She said, it means the prize in French. And I'm like, that's not how you spell it. She goes, that's how I spell it.
thanks for coming on to talk about. Tell folks how they can access your podcast, The Critical and the Curious.
Absolutely. The Critical and the Curious, season 2 Keanu's. So you can visit it at 2, 2, Keanu's.com. As I said, this is season 2. Season 1 is also available, which is a critical analysis of The Fast and Furious. So all of that is available. It's basically me and Bob Thompson fanning over pop trash.
We will put a link to that on the Pop Life website page. So hopefully you'll check it out. Again, thanks for joining us. And I've seen this film no less than 15 times. I feel number 16 coming on sometime this weekend. I'm just talked myself up into wanting to watch it again.